Hello there, this is episode 66 of the Van Hemlock Podcast, part of the Virgin Worlds Collective. Hello.
We're back.
Yes, we are.
Again, in the studio, which isn't too warm today.
Yeah, it's quite pleasant.
Yes.
A little sauna-like.
Let's see what it's like in an hour.
No time for idle chit-chat. Huge amount of news this week.
There's no news.
Oh.
Nothing has happened in the last week. Okay, you want the really big news?
Go for it.
Yes, Games Workshop have put Space Hulk up for a pre-order.
And about computer games?
Space Hulk's up.
Space Hulk, yes. Good, excellent. Tabletop gaming news there. Yeah. Update. Oh, wonderful.
The best news ever. It's a bit expensive, but the miniatures look wonderful.
Right, yeah. Good.
Well, you want me to cover a couple of the minor events during the week, do you?
If you would be so kind.
Yeah. God, I have to... I feel dirty. I have to lead with WoW news.
World of Warcraft, yes. Go for it.
Yes, well, what they're doing is they're doing a Tremel Felucia split.
God.
No, they're not.
It's the new expansion, yes.
Cataclysm.
Yes, they're, sounds suitably dramatic,
doesn't
it?
They're changing everything.
It's all going to be different or something.
Yeah.
Something to do with that big whirly in the whirlpool in the sea in between the two continents.
Yeah. And guilds can level up, and they've got cross-server pickup groups.
I just have to caveat at this point, neither my co-host nor me were following the whole BlizzCon thing over the last day or two. And
Twitter on Friday was boring.
There was lots of people following it, and there are obviously many better places to find out the specific details than here.
Go to wow.com.
Wow.com.
Or listen to the Instance.
The Instance podcast,
yeah,
of course.
They know what they're talking about.
Indeed. But we'll cover some of the highlights. What have you got?
Well, the cross-server pickup groups looks interesting to me.
Oh, they're going to... Because I know they did cross-server battlegrounds.
Yeah.
Because they just... a single individual server couldn't generally keep the queue rolling through fast enough.
Well, when you're popping into an instance now, you can pick up your... I was going to say a word there, which is a bit naughty. Now, you can pick up your very useful and always very productive group members from any server.
Right. So presumably the Meeting Stone system will integrate cross-server. And
I guess so.
You'll all find yourself in the instant, no matter which server you came from. Hmm, interesting.
I managed to talk about pickup groups without mentioning fuckwits.
Oh, we were doing so well.
Yes.
And guild levelling? Guilds have levels?
Yeah, guilds get levels now, which gives you a star.
AQ2. Still, that is what Blizzard do, isn't it?
They do it very well.
They
though.
Do. If they like your feature, they'll take it for themselves.
There's five new levels?
It's a form of flattery.
Yeah.
Five new levels?
I think it was five.
Five? That seems short.
15? I always thought it's going to a non...
Going to 85
now.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
If it's 85, then that is 5, because I think Lich King goes to 80. Listen to the pair of us.
We shouldn't be talking about this game.
We're going to get letters, aren't we? New races?
New races.
Goblins.
Yeah.
Goblins and Worgen, which are basically werewolves.
It also means the goblins have joined one or the other side.
Yeah.
I think it was
well,
the
goblins
guys,
always were
it?
Sort of neutral, sort of mercenary types who would basically sell to whoever, but it seems like they're weighing in with the Horde now, by the looks of it.
Yep.
And the werewolves are strangely going to become alliance, but I'm sure there'll be all sorts of game lore to explain whys and wherefores and whatnot.
And every other race gets to be every other class or something.
I think there's new race class combos coming in as well. Some of them I expect will make sense, like Goblin Shamans, the sort of thing you'd expect, but I don't know about any of the others, really.
Yeah.
New zones, obviously, new raids, etc.
Bluff. Flying mounts to all existing content.
Really?
Apparently.
That's going to be a lot of work.
They're rejigging everything.
They're going to have to do a lot of work on the existing old world, because a lot of them have... they are just sort of blank fascias, if you know what I mean. You can't fly over a lot of that stuff because it has no top.
Yeah.
Because they never anticipated anyone going over the top of it all. So that'd be a lot of revamp work.
Yep.
So presumably some sort of cataclysmic world-shaking alterations to pretty much most of the game, I suppose. So what does that make this expansion? Well, I suppose it would have to be an optional expansion, so they can't do too much to the old world.
Because
people may potentially only have World of Warcraft to the core product.
Yeah, you'll just get one massive patch.
Yeah. No, so there'll be little extra goodies for everyone involved in that, I imagine. But, okay. And presumably the previous two expansions required?
I don't know. I don't know if they've actually said.
No, okay. Well, as we said, there's probably far better places to find out more about that. But
it's out next year sometime. People are resubscribing now, which I think is a bit weird.
That's a little premature,
yeah. You'll be burnt out before this happens, guys.
Well, maybe if they'd been like myself, perhaps.
Putting
off Burning Crusade, putting off Wrath of the Lich King, and deciding to go for all three at once. Maybe now's the time to get up to speed on all the older stuff. I don't know.
Yeah, there's only one person in the world who's done that.
Well, perhaps, yes.
Okay, moving on.
Mm-hmm.
Fallen Earth and Champions Online have gone into open beta.
Yeah, a couple of open betas this week. Lots of people, floodgates open.
And Champions
Online... Are we still calling them open betas?
Okay.
Grumble.
Public previews, let's call them. And Champions Online, people are actually saying, looks good now.
I don't know, I get mixed impressions, but then I do hang out with a lot of City of Heroes people. So.
Tobold, I think, said that if you play it with a 360 controller, it's brilliant.
Ah, so this is perhaps designed from the word go as a console-ready title. Interesting. So presumably you've only got enough hotkeys that will fit on a 360 controller or whatever. So, yeah, I see. Some people liking the graphical style, some people not. It's a sort of cel-shady, sort of plasticized sort of look to it all, which is quite stylistic.
You don't really want a realistic-looking
I suppose on an objective level it would look better than City of Heroes, but then City of Heroes is quite dated by comparison.
City of Heroes does look a bit rubbish, to be honest.
Well,
to be brutally frank, it looks like it's about 5 years old.
Well, it's funny that, really.
Yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah.
Does this mean that City of Heroes is going to be forced into a graphical upgrade at some point, perhaps, with the forthcoming City of Rogues concept that they're doing? I don't know. All rumour, of course, but if they're going to stay competitive, they're going to have to pull their fingers out of it, I suspect.
They're going to have to do a sequel, aren't they?
Yeah, possibly. City of Heroes 2, who knows?
Even Hero.
So, I don't know. I'm picking up just following the blogs and seeing what people's opinions are. Some people like it, some people don't. It's a bit of a split, really, from what I've seen. But you get the sources there that seem to like it. So
apparently, I haven't played it. Probably never going to. Might play it when it comes out. Well, I would play it if it ever came out.
Well, now's your chance to have a look for free.
Okay, and also, Aeon has gone gold.
Aeon, Tower of Eternity, or whatever they call it.
Due for release in a couple of weeks, isn't it?
Yeah, it can't be far away. An actual release for that one. Have we got,
although, what does going gold mean?
Oh, look, we happen to have a massively list events calendar open.
They're
saying September the 22nd, Aeon launch, the date for that. So that'd be interesting.
We've got a busy couple of weeks, haven't
we? Well, it's this big summer lull. I think it's finally over. So much news happening all at once. It's great. It's a good time to be back in the MMOs, I think, dusting off the PC, going back indoors, hiding from the burning sky god.
Yep. And also, stupid story of the week. Apparently, Stargate Worlds has got funding now.
Oh, right. Now, because we have been sort of following this on and off, their trials and tribulations.
The train wreck of the story, which is the development of a massive IP.
Yeah. So, what funding have they got? There's some venture capitalists have stepped forward with a bit of cash.
To try and to give it a bit of bridge funding to get it to release.
Ah, I see. Yeah.
Unfortunately, they're way, way, way too late to the party.
You reckon?
Well, the Stargate and Atlantis.
Oh, the tie-in stuff, yeah.
Have been delayed
for
the next round because of the economy.
It's going to have to stand on its own then. There's not going to be any big tie-in to go with it.
Well, no, the new show's out in October.
Okay.
So they could try and release for then, maybe.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's a completely different thing, and it's not all this messing around. It's a darker, more Battlestar Galactica-style Robert Carlyle in it thing.
Okay. It's just keeping the brand going, isn't it?
Yeah.
Keeping the public awareness and consciousness of it, which is always important with an IP tie-in. You know, if you've got something real-world to link your game to, even if it is slightly tenuous, you're saying.
And I would just like to congratulate James Egan here for the screenshot he used on the story, which has the worst likenesses of SG-1 I've ever seen.
Excellent.
If the graphics look like that, it's going to be brilliant.
I mean, this was one I was sort of moderately curious and interested by.
I did quite like the series,
quite like the TV show. I mean, it was sort of comically ham-fisted, but it never took itself too seriously.
Yeah.
And I think the game could be interesting.
Inept instance of the week, basically.
Yeah, well, that's exactly it. The whole premise of the show is you've got this big whirly portal, which takes you to an instance where an adventure will happen.
Yeah.
Week.
How can you go wrong with that idea?
They are living an MMO.
Yeah. And they're just as useless as the average pickup room.
Exactly. It's out of any of the IP tie-ins, I think this would have been one of the stronger ones. But seems like, plagued by financial troubles on and off over the last year or so. But looks like, don't know. Well, we'll have to wait and see. New funding development to continue, apparently. So
beta, please.
Well, yeah. Let's keep watching that space.
This one does need to be shockingly good, though, to succeed.
Perhaps it would have been shockingly good, and yet never had the chance to show us. Yeah. This is the thing. We never know.
Yeah.
Unless it actually gets
there.
I
hope it is going to be.
Yeah.
Although it needs to be out before March, thinking about it.
Right.
Because that's when Star Trek Online comes out.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, and I reckon there's an awful lot of crossover in the people who like their incompetent Mission of the Week shows.
Do you think they could complement each other well, then?
No.
Fair enough.
Star Trek's going to have spaceships.
Ah, yeah. Is this not going to get spaceships? They tool around in giant battle spaceships that they make from alien technology sometimes.
You're not going to be given your own ship.
I'm not going to be given my own ship.
Whereas in Star Wars, apparently you can have your own ship. You can have your own selection
Star
of ships.
Star Trek.
Star Trek. I'm giving up.
Yes. Moving on.
Anyway, Guild Wars 2 trailer.
Oh, yeah.
Discuss.
Wow. Yes, that was a lot
Stuffy robots following people around.
Well, that's the
sign of a good game.
That's the Azuras, isn't it? It looks, I don't know, it looks like they're modifying the Ranger class, the Beastmastery, to work with Azuras and give them robot pets instead of animals. I don't know. It's got everyone talking. I mean, it was basically five minutes long or so, and the first 2-3 minutes are just like really lavish, sort of pseudo animated concept art floating around the place. And you know, you look at this and you think, well, yeah. And I mean, it's like Guild Wars has never been short on style. I mean, you know, they've always held a very high standard of polish of world design, of concept art, all that stuff's always been very good. So that was never going to be the debatable thing. Now, also, it contained fly-throughs of what looked to be game engine stuff, and it looked very good.
There was a fade between one of the stylistic shots into a game engine-looking shot.
Because the concept art, would have been dictating the world design.
Really did look nice.
Yeah. I mean, but then, you know, well, the existing Guild Wars game is getting on a bit, and it still doesn't look that dated.
Character models are a little low poly, but the landscapes are still nice.
Yeah, absolutely. It's always been a fantastic world just to wander around in and
it does,
explore.
It does have that old-gen graphics engine look.
Yeah. And the fly-throughs on this new engine look fantastic, and I do. It sort of made me worry a bit. I mean, they've said that they're going to try and keep to a mid-range spec PC as their standard.
It can look nice on a PC without needing a spectacular...
Well, I don't know. I mean, Asia Conan has taught me otherwise.
It's all down to art design.
Well, absolutely. I mean, Guild Wars itself, that and World of Warcraft were two that went very well and highly regarded as being looking great on low-end PCs or mid-spec PCs or whatever. You didn't need to have a stupid ninja graphics card or a massive upgrade just to get the thing running on higher settings, you know. And it sort of shows what you can achieve with a little. You know, you can do a lot with a little if you're good at it, and ArenaNet certainly are. So, yeah, I'm not sure much. I don't know. I mean, I wasn't going to get drawn into the big second by second, frame by frame analysis of what this could mean for the future game. I mean, there was a FAQ as well on the little site there, guildwars2.com, obviously, the website, and there's a FAQ there. And it addresses a couple of points on gameplay, but at the moment it's all still up in the air a bit. I mean, I've seen lots of people analysing, speculating.
Quite a few blogs I've read seem to think that it's going to be the next big thing.
Well, yeah, I've seen the old WoW killer dusted off again, you know, but I think a
lot of these commenters are not going to mention any names.
Yeah, I know, but I know exactly who you mean.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know who you are.
Yeah.
He doesn't read.
I'm sure they don't listen, though. No, but
listen, whatever. God, I'm not with it today, am I?
Anyway.
It's really bad for a news section.
Keep moving.
Wanting it to be something which Guild Wars isn't.
Yeah, it was basically sort of lots of commentary along the lines of the more like World of Warcraft this game will be, the better, you know. And I just, no, it's a different thing. Guild Wars always was a different thing. It looks like an MMO, but plays like something else. And I don't know. I'll come right out and say it. I'm a huge Guild Wars fanboy. I run a guild in Guild Wars. We meet every week, and we've been playing for at least a year or two as a guild, and much longer than before that. I've stuck with Guild Wars more or less since the launch of Factions, on and off. So
can't beat that monthly fee.
Well, exactly. Yeah, the monthly fee is great, but. And I have come, and the reason I do that is because I do like the game that is presented as Guild Wars. You know, the basic gameplay there, the eight hotkeys, time based skills.
It's one of the cleverer games out there. Still.
Yeah, the dynamic group gameplay, all of this, the interruption is a massive core element of the game. I like the instancing. I like the PvP structure of it all.
The skill system alone marks it out as being way more interesting than say WoW.
Yeah, and there are certain core fundamental things in that design that are Guild Wars. And, you know, if you move away from those, then, well, I don't know. See, I'm getting a bit worried about the whole idea of persistent open world zones, proper, you know, MMO zones as every other MMO would understand it, where you can meet lots of people and you can all fight monsters together just
that
by
sucks.
Wandering past.
I've stood in a town in Guild Wars.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. I mean, I don't know if it's just lack of monthly fee. That's probably a terribly snobbish way to look at it. But, yeah, I mean, this is a game where many people just keep local chat turned off. And I wonder, well, you know, if that's only on the basis of what people can say to you, what about what can they do to you if they're allowed in the same zone as you? The pickup grouping in that game is not terribly great either. I don't know, perhaps I'm just being a bit of an arrogant snob, but I just worry that trying to turn it into a normal MMO will rob it of its uniqueness and magic. So, but we'll see. I mean, I think it's too early to tell. I mean, I don't know when the projected date for Guild Wars 2 is. You're talking late 2010, if that. But
I don't know, it might be early, you never know. But
quite a way to go. I'm interested, let's put it that way. I'm interested. I mean, the video was very good, I was impressed. Now I'm waiting to see and hear about actual details.
All I can really say is it has the potential to really impress me and also the potential to very much disappoint.
And it's like I was saying to the rest of the guild when we were talking about it on our little forums there. I think as long as they don't turn Guild Wars 1 off, I don't mind what they do. There will always be the choice. If it turns out to become two very different games, that's fine. I still like the first game and I might like the second game.
Okay, moving on from cries of people destroying one game to moving on to cries of people destroying another game.
Go on then.
CCP.
Oh, blimey, yeah. This is your go at a rant, isn't it?
A console version of EVE.
Console EVE.
Which
man,
is
the
a
sky is falling.
With our specs of RTS.
EVE first person shooter. Yeah, and the sky really did fall, didn't it?
Oh, God. Yes, that's why we can't have nice things,
people. Go on then. Talk us through what you understand the concept to have meant.
Right, what this thing is, apparently.
Stand by your radios and pay attention.
Yes. A first-person shooter for consoles, not mentioned PC at the moment, but it may come in that in the future, which people got really upset at. Oh, it's not fair, all these console peoples. I don't want to play a game which also has console people in.
Yes.
Yeah.
EVE players are unrelentingly highbrow, really, in their gaming, aren't they?
An awful lot of EVE players seem to be twats.
Ooh, controversial. We'll get letters.
Oh, if we could get mentioned on the forum, that would be brilliant. That'd be brilliant. Just think of extra listeners.
Do you want me to amend this little piece with your in-game name?
No.
No, fair enough. Anyway, yes. Go on.
And basically what will happen is you're fighting around on planets in what sounds like instance little battlegrounds.
Okie dokie.
But that's pure speculation.
Yeah.
And when you win stuff, it influences sovereignty.
Oh, and there was much gnashing of teeth.
People saying, oh, you shouldn't have to depend on console players to do sovereignty.
All these EVE players. Yeah, it was. Like, I think the term console kiddies was bandied about a lot.
Yeah.
So
I don't think that EVE players know that console players laugh at them as well.
Well, I think everyone laughs at everyone else. That's the interweb.
That's the thing about gaming. Everyone laughs at another bit of gaming.
The old the two Ronnies sketch with John Cleese in it.
Yeah.
I look down on him. Yeah.
He plays an MMO.
I look up to him. Yeah.
And it's the PC gamer. At the bottom, I know my place. Just quietly getting on with it.
Yeah.
Yeah, yes, and there's a lot of gnashing of teeth because people don't want sovereignty to be entirely based on console gaming, which is not what it is.
For context, just for the people who don't play EVE, sovereignty is your sort of end-game territorial PvP, really, isn't it? It's how you control areas of territory.
Well, if there's such a thing
as end-game. And it's usually decided by...
At the moment, you have to put up a small space station around a moon and have it there for a certain amount of time.
And that then... stakes your claim, as it were.
Yeah. And the more weeks that tick over, it gets better and better, and your sovereignty level increases. And the higher it gets, the more bonuses.
And so the actual PvP, the larger PvP revolves around destroying and erecting these towers to pin out your bit of the map. So yeah.
And it is incredibly boring.
So in the future, there'll be some element of the results of a PvP match, FPS deathmatch.
That will influence it.
Yeah.
But other stuff will also.
Have we heard how
much
and any of the mechanics yet? No, very early concept.
No details at all. They're just going off and panicking.
Everyone needs to calm down and wait and see what happens.
People aren't remembering the number one rule about CCP. They launch everything so nerfed it doesn't do anything.
Pre-nerfed, yeah. Well, this is going to be an FPS by the same people who made the EVE Online that you know and love. So I think, you know, benefit of the doubt's fairly reasonable, you know.
Interestingly, though, the thing that really excites me about this is this is a first-person shooter on the console with direct access to the Eve universe. So
presumably there'll be chat integration.
You're going to have chat integration to arrange.
Possibly
that.
Even corporations.
Yes. Yeah. Corporations and alliances are going to go across. Well, alliances, I don't know if corps were. But yeah, it's going to be in the same universe.
Yeah. It does sound innovative in that regard, even no matter what you think about EVE Online. Just the mechanics of it sound fascinating, yeah.
And do you want to know a secret? Mm? This is probably the engine for walking in stations. This is probably why it's taking so long.
Because I'm not really that much of an EVE follower, and I was sort of looking at all this and I'm thinking, well, what happened to Ambulation then?
It's still coming.
And this is all the same sort of stuff, I suppose. Yeah. Perhaps an offshoot of the technologies that derived while they were working out how Ambulation was going to work.
Quite possibly.
Yeah.
This does actually have...
Also, what happened to World of Darkness?
We did mention World of Darkness.
Okay, fair enough.
It's their American studios up to something. Dust, which is the new game, is done by CCP Shanghai.
Oh, right.
Which nobody had a clue of what they were doing before. We knew they had a Shanghai.
So it's a whole new CCP studio working on this then, presumably with integration to the CCP Reykjavik, the EVE Online game itself.
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting stuff.
I think it's going to be good. It has the possibility.
No cause for alarm yet. Wait and see what the details are like.
And the question is, if this game it becomes an MMO, purely because it's part of another MMO. So this game could have no MMO aspects at all, apart from the chat and the corps and whatnot.
Because this is
still by default, it has to be an MMO. Otherwise, you've got two games in the same persistent universe with interaction where one's an MMO and one isn't.
Because this is basically the reverse jump to light speed, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's what struck me about it all. You got this traditional ground-based MMO and they added a space bit, and I suppose that in itself didn't destroy Star Wars Galaxies.
It was woefully underused.
Yeah, it could have been integrated better, but I didn't think it damaged it at all. I mean, the NGE came along later and that's a whole different story.
I'm really excited about this.
It's interesting, yeah.
I'm looking forward to my corp having ground pounders.
I'm not much of an FPS player anyway, but I think I would come back just to see how it works, just to see what it does.
There are questions about implementation, like, what sort of game is it? Is it a drop-in first-person shooter?
Mm-hmm.
If so, how do you control where you fight and who for?
Are we talking Counter-Strike matches, or are we talking something more planet-side-like?
Yeah.
Larger overriding campaign?
Are there travel times?
Well, do you have to, yeah, I can't see that working too well.
Well, you can't have players
to sit there in the hold of a kestrel or something for 3 hours.
The thing that I think would work is when you're assaulting a system, you drop off a bunch of clones as a resource, and then people can spawn to that side.
You prepare spawn points ahead of time. Yeah,
And once they run out, people can no longer spawn to that fight.
Yeah, possibly. We just don't know.
Yeah.
Be interesting to see.
I reckon it's possible to do most of this, but you have to be very careful to make a game which appeals to both sides.
I mean, it's how much of the take-up will a game based on EVE Online for the console or FPS attract general FPS players? Or
it's something to do while ice mining as well.
Yeah, for those who have a console next to the PC, that'd be awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. So yes, we're going to hear more about that in FanFest.
Watching that with great interest.
So we'll have more in.
Sounds fascinating.
Quite soon, actually. FanFest is earlier this year, isn't it? Yeah. Anyway, moving on. That was Monday's news,
right?
Tuesday's news.
Yeah, busy.
Sony, shock horror! Nobody saw this coming. Released a smaller console, a smaller PS3.
Oh, okay. This is your PS3 Slim.
Yeah, and lopped $100 off the price.
Ah, price cut after all.
Yeah.
PS3.
Now, in America,
they
knocked $100 off, and it's now cheaper than the 360 Elite. So it looks like the 360 Elite's getting a price cut as well to be at the same price. So they're going to be $299 each.
Competition hotting up a bit then.
But over here, we only get £50 knocked off.
Yeah, but that's because, as they've stated in previous press releases, in Europe we care more about quality than price.
Yeah. they said that they really aren't allowed to do any more. They can't.
Oh.
And they've actually been
quite... aren't allowed? Is it some sort of EU trading laws?
No, Sony.
Oh.
You should have seen the way Sony's stock price plunged after this announcement.
Mm.
And a couple of other announcements. Yes.
So we have to sneakily import ours from the US then, no problem.
Then you won't be able to play UK Blu-rays.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's £250 now,
which
is still more expensive than the Elite.
Still more than I'd want to pay for a current generation console.
So it's still the most expensive console, and if the Elite gets a price cut over here, it's going to the pros point, then the Xbox will all be cheaper than the Wii and the PS3.
Oh, I love these tooth and nail consumer wars. The customer always wins.
Now, the new PS3 loses the ability to install Linux on the box.
I'm sure that was had a huge take-up, yeah.
Yeah. But it does gain the ability to do better audio for Blu-rays.
Okay, and this is all in addition to it being smaller now. Yeah. Is it about the same size as a Wii and that sort of size?
No. It's slightly wider, slightly that way.
Mm.
It's just really less tall, but a bit longer.
Okay, fair enough.
And it does look rather nice. Might have to buy one.
Hmm. Yay, cast off huge PlayStation.
No. and they've also announced the recommended retail price for the PSP Go, which is a replacement for the PSP, is £224. Which is only a couple of pounds less than the PS3, Sony.
That's quite expensive for a handheld.
I don't know if you've noticed this, but we can buy a PS3 for only slightly more than we can buy the new PSP.
You think they'd know, really. Yeah. Yeah, joined up thinking. Yeah.
The size difference in the consoles is quite big.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well. But Tesco's is selling it for £200.
So all in all, a big shuffling season for the prices of various consoles there. Now might be a good time to start thinking about buying them.
Well, the thing is, there was this strange product recommendation thing from one of the shops over here saying that the arcade is either getting a price rise to the Pro's point or that the arcade's going to go away and the Pro will be the only one. So I reckon it's possible that the arcade's getting discontinued over there.
It always confused me why there needed to be three different sorts of Xbox.
I think there's going to be just one soon in the UK. And it'll be the Elite at, was it 170?
Because it's basically just different sized hard disk, isn't it, between the three?
Yeah.
You don't get one, you get 61, you get 121.
Yeah.
And presumably hard disk prices to manufacture are coming down a bit.
Hard disk prices are nothing between the three.
Fair enough.
Microsoft, and actually Sony as well, are really stiff, really not being...
Maybe it's a marketing ploy. You create a thing and then you create a perceptibly less value thing and don't, with no intention of actually selling it, but to make people think they're getting something better when they get the proper thing.
That's actually a true point. There is a book, which I can't remember its name, but it detailed that in great detail.
Yeah.
Without remembering the name of the book.
You make this perceptibly substandard thing and put it on for a lower price so that people think they're getting better when you just don't want to sell that lower price thing anyway.
Yes, and that does actually work.
Yeah.
Also, the new PS3 still doesn't have backward compatibility and it's never going to happen. I still don't get.
Yeah.
In the meantime,
yes,
the advertising campaign for the PS3 Slim looks shockingly like a series of photos by a guy called Phil Toledano, who did an art thing.
Right.
And so it looks like that Sony have ripped off his idea for their advert.
Yeah.
Now, this comes also...
What could possibly go wrong with that?
Well, Sony have done it several times. And Microsoft just used the music that Sony used as the theme for Little Big Planet.
I'm so confused. I might accidentally buy the wrong platform.
Now, this is a larger point.
Bah.
Why is it that adverts are allowed to rip off any idea they want or any artist and get away with it?
I think because everyone's afraid of trying to sue an advertising company because they're vast, powerful, megalithic organisations who scare everyone else to death.
Well, you think that if you go after an advertising company, the publicity may be skewed in their favour?
Something like that, yeah. They'll be masters of the PR. I don't think it's a losing battle from the word go.
But it happens again and again, not just in computer games, in all adverts.
These adverts are only around for, what, 6 weeks?
Sometimes longer.
I suppose.
Yeah, but they just rip them off without any... You know, plagiarism.
I hadn't really thought about it, but yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, moving on. Yes, apparently, the CDC thinks that we are all...
CDC?
Centre of Disease Control.
Right, okay.
Thinks that we're all 35, fat and depressed.
All of us?
I'm now depressed, yes.
I'm 34, thank you very much.
Yeah, I'm 34. And now I'm depressed because I've been told
I'm fat, yeah.
Yeah.
So that's depressed me. I might go and eat a sandwich.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. This is research into the habits of gamers, is it?
Yeah, but unfortunately it's one of those shockingly awful bits of research.
Which straight on the floor with that piece of paper, yeah. Don't blame you.
Oh, this is a brilliant story.
Was that the one that suggested that male gamers are more likely to be fat and female gamers are more likely to be depressed? Was that the breakdown? I remember reading a little bit about it.
Possibly.
You'd have to pick it up off the floor, really, wouldn't you? Never mind. Moving on.
It was a completely bollocks story.
Well, generalisations, isn't it?
For many, many years, Mattel were the largest name in toys.
Right.
And no longer.
Of Barbie fame. Why are you looking at me like that? Carry on.
Yes, he does have a rather impressive Barbie collection. No Kens. Doesn't like the...
I don't like the competition, no.
Kens a threat.
Shut up and read the news.
Yes, Nintendo is now the top of the toy market.
Right.
Worldwide toys and games market, Nintendo
is... That's pretty impressive. So was that, is that just Nintendo games consoles?
Yeah.
DS?
I guess.
Wii, whatever.
Yeah.
Does the games count? That's,
yeah.
Games are toys. Yeah, I suppose. Certainly Wii games generally are, yeah. Ow, yeah.
Yeah, that's impressive, really.
So there we go. Not so much a niche anymore, obviously.
Well, no, it's still a niche. It's still games. Okay.
Done, Nintendo.
Bit of PC news.
Oh, good. Go for it.
Steam's now got Fallout on it and all the other Interplay games.
Ah, right. Good old games were running the back catalogue of Interplay.
Yeah.
I'm guessing the Interplay back catalogue must be quite cheap to buy and relicense.
Good old games has them cheaper and with no DRM to buy them from there.
Well, Steam hasn't got DRM on anyway, yeah. Is it? Oh, it is DRM itself. Yeah. But
Steam itself is the DRM system. Don't let anyone tell you anything other.
Well, quite. But yeah.
Final Fantasy 14 or whatever we're up to.
Yes.
Apparently, they do want to do it on the 360.
Uh-huh.
And they would quite like to do it, but Microsoft are holding them up.
Oh, bad Microsoft, boo.
Xbox Live policy is holding them up.
Ah, what, you mean that a game has to be working and not full of bugs and stuff?
No, it's Microsoft don't really have this thing about MMOs. They either don't get them or don't like them. I suspect they don't like them.
Well, Microsoft are no stranger to MMOs because they initially were behind Acheron's Call.
Yeah, before, they dumped it.
Well, before Turbine, bought it back off them and ran it themselves.
Yeah.
Initially, it was a Microsoft product.
There's also rumour that, of course, that Lord of the Rings is set to go on the 360, but they can't get past Microsoft because they want to release it for free, and Microsoft want them to charge.
The monthly fee?
Yeah.
Well, this is always going to be the big problem, isn't it, with an MMO? Who is going to pay a console gamer going to pay $15 a month for one title when they're already paying for whatever their console's live subscription service is?
PS3, which is nothing.
Well,
but even so, I don't think console gamers are going to pay a subscription for a game.
No, not for a single game, no. I mean, I could see a package, perhaps, the Sony Station Pass sort of thing. I could see that working, perhaps, as some sort of console plus package where you would get all this premium stuff, which MMOs would be a part of. But
I'm going to call it. We're not going to get a single 360 MMO.
You just don't think the Microsoft's policies will allow for a traditional MMO subscription? What about free-to-play, would they?
I don't think Microsoft want them.
Oh, I see. Yeah, because this is basically, they want LOTRO to be free-to-play on the console. Yeah, and Microsoft want it to be monthly.
Allegedly.
Well,
if you look at it from Microsoft's point of view, MMOs are rubbish.
I'm trying to empathise with that view, I suppose.
Microsoft's point of view is they want people to buy as many games as possible.
Yeah. Does it not occur to them that they can make a similar amount of money selling the same game for many, many months, which is what the traditional MMO model
is? That doesn't please all of their different customers, who are the publishers.
Because the publishers want to shift actual boxes.
Yeah, the publishers want to shift game after game.
So it's all a big shadowy conspiracy.
And if everyone's stuck there playing WoW on the 360 or whatever.
Yeah, they're not fulfilling their quota as good little consumers.
Yeah, and it'll be bad for the rest of the games, is probably the view.
Well, it's possible, I could see that. It's a difficult sort of thing to prove, I suppose, without secret tape footage and meetings and things, which we'll try and sort out for next show.
We could go to...
if we go off
to Washington and kidnap Major Nelson.
We're not allowed to kidnap more people.
Okay.
It doesn't work as a feature. They just sit there in front of the mic going, and then looking panicky when I come at them with the petrol. You know, it's just not good. Not good radio.
You shouldn't waterboard people with petrol.
Anyway.
While smoking.
Moving on rapidly.
Yes, and so I'm calling it. I don't reckon
you don't think
I don't reckon we're going to see a...
I think we'd have seen one by now, to be honest.
Yeah,
it's not
well.
Technically... I don't know what's involved, obviously, I'm guessing, but I can't imagine it's technically vastly more difficult than making the thing in the first place for the PC.
Yeah.
There'll be a certain compatibility. I mean, you see PC console ports of single-player games easily
all
enough.
All the time, yeah.
The network coding and the integration with whatever account system can't be
difference.
That difficult.
Yeah. It's exactly the same.
I think there's more to it. I think there's some big sinister reasons why we haven't seen a 360.
When Criterion did Burnout, they said that the reason why there's no cross-platform is because they were told to take it out, not because it was hard to do.
Yeah, yeah. I think there's political, perhaps, you know, managerial reasons why we've yet to see a decent MMO on a console, and unlikely to for any time soon.
But Sony seem a lot more in favour of them, although Sony do seem to be a lot more in favour of Sony MMOs.
Well, quite. Sony've got their own little company doing it, although Sony Online Entertainment. It would make more sense for them, I suppose, to work with the Sony Station Pass or whatever and get that onto PS3s or future development titles and so on.
So we'll just have to see what happens, but I reckon that PS3 is going to be the home of choice for MMOs.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah.
Yeah. Next, there were some screenshots released for LEGO Universe.
Screenshots, I'd had a quick look. They looked...
Lego-y,
yeah. What can you say?
Now, you see, the problem is they're releasing screenshots for... when what they should be doing is releasing information about how the game plays.
Well, or perhaps videos as well.
Yeah.
Because Lego, aesthetically, is designed to look very simple anyway. So
it's an off-rendering challenge.
No, you're not going to get sore away sensational screenshots from any Lego product, really, are you?
No. Next.
Mm-hmm.
Moving swiftly along, because that's a story with no information but screenshots.
Right.
bad news, everybody.
Uh-oh.
Modern Warfare 2... is now $60 on the PC as well.
Ah, right. So rather than bring the price down for the console people...
they brought the price up for the PC people. So I reckon PC games are looking at across-the-board increases when...
There goes our smugness, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Bastard publishers.
Well, yeah, credit crunch, isn't it? You know, recession. You combat recession by putting your prices up massively.
They can get screwed themselves.
Yeah, I'm not going to buy it. But then I probably wasn't going to buy it anyway, so it's no real hardship.
Yeah. good Marvel news.
Oh, are we on comics again?
That's game news.
Okay, dokie.
But I think we should become the premier source of comic news. Marvel are not going to do any more crappy movie games.
Hooray! I don't know how I feel about that, actually. I have no real opinion on crappy movies. Obviously, they're crappy.
Unfortunately, this is off the back of them having done one good game.
Yeah.
Their last game was good, so they could just be saying, we're not doing any more crappy ones.
Oh, because, all of our games in future are going to be awesome.
Yeah.
Okay, you can do that, can you? Wow.
Apparently, or they are actually putting effort into it, and it's not just marketing bollocks.
Yeah, yeah. Sort of basic port onto whatever run-around city 3D game you've got on the boil.
One of the things is... Their plan is to move away from, it seems, the movie tie-in. If you look at the Wolverine game, which was released at the same time as the Wolverine film...
Yeah, you had quite a high opinion of that.
Totally different plot, really good game, and played well.
Yeah.
Didn't try and follow a movie plot, being the key.
Yeah, you look at the movie script and you end up running through trying to tick all the boxes in computer game
and
form.
And then you get the last Superman game, which it was... a game which every so often it just tacks in a cutscene which follows the film plot, and then
just
after that,
a piece
that,
of the film at the end of each level.
No, it's rendered,
and
after that badly, and after that you just continue doing what you were doing. There's absolutely no play with the plot.
Yeah, now that's a crappy film tie-in game. Yeah,
it's like
in the most literal sense.
It's like, and I find it hard to think why it isn't that. 5 seconds before they released, they were told they were a tie-in game.
Yeah, this is bad when the art assets are the last thing to go in. Yeah.
Yeah, but they're basically saying that Iron Man 2 was going to be better than Iron Man 1, the game, that is.
I have no idea what
Iron Man 1
was like.
Awful.
Was it?
Yeah.
I've not seen the film.
Have you?
No, I must get around to that.
That's a brilliant film. It's very, 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 very good.
Okay.
Yes. We approve of Iron Man.
Jolly good.
Actually, also, DC have a good superhero game coming out soon, which isn't a movie tie-in. It's the new Batman.
Is this the Arkham Asylum thing? Oh, yeah. I've seen a lot of people talking about that.
The demo is brilliant.
Quite high praise, yeah.
Probably released by the time you hear this.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah, good. We approve of good Marvel games, although Ultimate Alliance...
We disapprove of crappy games.
Ultimate Alliance 2 is out soon, and Ultimate Alliance 1 wasn't very special.
Right.
Okay. Also on Tuesday.
Settle in, folks. This might be a longer show than usual.
There was a Microsoft Lionhead press release, press conference thing, in which they only talked about Lionhead stuff. So I think Microsoft pulled a couple of announcements.
Ah, so poor old Fable 3 got Fable 3 the filler, did it?
Fable 3 got announced for next year, which sounds interesting.
Yeah.
A modern new game, always interesting, may not always be as good as he says, but it's always worth the experience.
I enjoyed Fable 1. You know, I don't think it was quite the messianic experience everyone made it out to be, but it was an enjoyable little romp.
And Fable 2 is getting re-released, cut up into chapters. So an episodic release for Fable 2 on Xbox Live.
Okay. Quite interesting way of doing things.
The first chapter's free. And from then on, you can buy the others.
It's a bit like the old shareware days, isn't it?
It's very much like the old shareware days.
Like Doom. That was great. You didn't need to bother buying Doom because they gave away so much of it, you were satiated.
Yeah.
It was three episodes. The first one was free, and the second one just had like two extra monsters and two extra guns in it.
And a couple of different textures, It's a nice way of doing it, I think, because you, for an adventure game, you give away the beginning of the plot as the demo, and then people get hooked.
Yeah.
Next up, we've got Microsoft Evil pricing news.
More pricing news.
Yes. Now, are you sitting down?
You go on then.
The dastardly Microsoft.
Yeah.
Means that Windows 7 is going to cost half as much in the UK as in the US. Hang on, that can't be right.
What? Why?
No, that is right, yes.
Have they done the basic mistake where they believe $1 equals £1?
No. What they've done is they've made it so, especially, well, on Amazon especially, it's incredibly cheap in the UK. £65 for the full non-upgrade version of Windows 7 Home Premium.
And that would be enough for PC gaming, would it?
Oh, yeah, that's more than enough for PC gaming.
Okay.
That's $107.
I have to look into that, although I...
And the upgrade in America is $120, and the full price is $200.
Strange.
So we are paying half as much.
Yeah, right.
Stop
that.
Sorry, one of the few times we get to laugh at other
Do I need to apply the 3-month rule to Windows 7?
No.
No, is it all good now, and would you recommend an upgrade?
I would,
as
yes.
As is? Okay,
yes.
All right, I'll have to do that. I mean, I never had a problem with Vista. I know everyone else hated it, but yeah, it does a lot of things that are quite annoying, and I wouldn't mind a more streamlined and more working experience.
It still does a lot of those annoying things, but it's better all round and faster.
Okay, I'll have to come back to this in another show, I suppose.
Yeah. Expansion news?
Yeah.
Age of Conan has announced Rise of the Godslayer.
Is this Wednesday now, is it?
I forgot what day this is.
Rise of the Godslayer, yes. Age of Conan expansion announced.
Yeah.
More news there.
They're not changing the level cap, but they're going out sideways and adding more content from 20 to 80.
Ah, right. Well, I did always feel when I was playing through that the 20 to however far I got content was a bit one track.
Yeah.
There was no alting, there was no alternate zones. You couldn't actually do, because there's three different kingdoms, but you had to jump between them to keep the level progression going, which is annoying.
They're also adding the Empire of Kitai.
Yeah, which is
Cartman's thing.
Which is your sort of, the Hyborian Far East,
and it's
really.
It's adding kittens as well.
Kittens. Chitons.
Kittens.
Yeah, kittens. You know, I'd have had a reality check on the naming convention meeting. You know, when you're whiteboard brainstorming session, nobody spotted that one read as kittens.
I think they were looking at lolcats at the same time.
Yeah, well, so more content for people already on their way up, presumably.
Yep.
Nothing, no big end. Well, perhaps there'll be the odd end game raid.
It's
whatever.
Not concentrated on the end game. So,
no,
yeah.
Well, no, interesting. Worth going back to have a look
because we're. Running out of news. Assassin's Creed 2 has cast Danny Wallace in it.
Danny Wallace?
Yeah. That's brilliant.
Who is Danny Wallace, for those who don't know?
He is an author and comedian in the UK, and most people outside the UK probably don't know.
And he's going to be what, the assassin guy?
He's just got a part of it.
Ah, right, fair enough.
Sean Hastings.
Hastings. I have no idea who that
is. He is a historian, guide, and source of information to the player as he proceeds through the game.
Ah, I see. A sort of sidekick, sort of radio voice type of thing.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And that's going to be brilliant.
Yeah, right. I still haven't played Assassin's Creed 1. I've got so many gaps, so many stuff I have to come back and do.
You're going to have to get yourself a console and borrow a lot of my games.
I think I may have to do that, yes.
Yeah. Next up, Unholy Rage.
Oh, God. Go on, then.
Yes. Yeah.
Talk about this. This was
CCP banned an awful lot of macro miners.
Yeah, some sort of internal project name, Unholy Rage.
Yeah.
And they basically massively clamped down on basically gold farmers, macro miners, AFK.
During scheduled downtime on June the 22nd, they banned just over 6,200 paying accounts.
Of about 350,000?
Yeah. They saw a massive drop in load on the server. And they've got some graphs. And there was
I did see the graphs, yeah. Brilliant.
They banned 2% of total registered accounts.
Yeah.
And the CPU per usage was cut by 30%.
So, yeah, 2% of players were using 30% of the hardware.
Yeah. Yeah, let's ban these people. These are not nice people to have on your service.
Well, yeah, but does... Well, how comes they are using far more processor than a legitimate and normal playing player?
Probably because they are bots.
Because they were utilising commands a lot faster than people who are actually playing, who tend to sit about and do nothing for long periods of time.
Or it was triggering anti-bot code or something.
Maybe.
Yeah.
So that's potentially made it less laggy for everyone else, after a fashion. Yeah.
And then they also released a graph of the player population in Ingun, which is a system popular for... macro mining.
Okay, presumably a very high sec system and lots of asteroids there.
And it went down from around 200 players, or 150 to 200 players, down to a point on the graph so low that I can't really tell what it is.
So just basically, when they were going through doing their banning, they just pick out this particular star system and kill everyone in there. Right.
And it got rid of all of the nasty people from that. Mm. And apparently, if you go mining now, there are big roids.
Yeah?
Yeah.
If your corporate mining activities might want to look into Ingram, is it?
I think everyone's gone there.
You've got an empty system all for yourselves now.
But apparently, all over the shop, there's nice roids for everyone now.
And I suppose in the next quarterly newsletter thing, we'll start to see a knock-on of this big effort.
I do hope so, yes.
Mm. Interesting to see what it does to the overall economy.
We just had a quarterly newsletter, but it was rather boring this week. Didn't say anything that interesting.
It is an economic newsletter, I mean, you know, for a game.
Next. Carmack has been talking again.
Oh, yeah.
Apparently, the ad-based free-to-play model is not working for Quake Live.
Oh, now this is fascinating.
This is important.
Mm, yes, because we've seen, I suppose, over the last couple of months, a definite change in the wind and move towards the free-to-play model over the subscription model. I mean, this is very debatable and people get quite heated when talking about it, but there are a lot more free-to-play games now than there were this time 6 months ago, and we're starting to see AAA games go that way as well. I don't know if you want to call Dungeons & Dragons Online AAA, but they're retooling their game to become free-to-play. I think Chronicles of Spellborn is also currently free-to-play while they redesign it, literally free-to-play. You can just go in there and play for nothing with no anything, but they're rejigging it all to work on a conventional free-to-play business model as well. So then we had this discussion, didn't we, during the week?
Yeah.
I couldn't work out if there was any empirical way to tell if a free-to-play model was better for a company than a subscription model.
And I think we came to the conclusion that we didn't know. And it was going to take an awful lot of discussion to be able to work anything
out. Who's going to come out with all their information? Well, it turns out...
Id.
Yeah,
brilliant.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So what are they actually saying? They're trying to run it entirely based
Carmack
on advertising.
Said, the in-game advertising stuff has not been big business. It's not going to be able to carry the project.
Right.
He also noted that while a subscription service will be offered, the game will never go exclusively pay-to-play.
Mm-hmm.
The subscription model will allow players to create and host private server matches.
Right.
Which is actually a good thing, because on PC, first-person shooters, they are, and I... If you disagree with me, you're in the other camp. They are full of people who are insanely good, which makes it impossible for a normal person to have a fun in them, usually.
Well, I think the ability to set up a private game with just you and your friends is an important thing.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you just get random stranger come in and own everyone and then lola skate over your corpses, and that's not much fun for anyone concerned. But, yeah, so matchmaking, setting up games of comparable skilled players, that sort of thing. More options there. I suppose this subscription option is also a vote of confidence in the project.
I guess
if you want it to survive, you might need to pay something.
Yeah.
and whether many people will be responsible enough to go for that, or whether it will just end up being pulled because they can't afford to do it, is another matter. But I've seen advertising in games disappear as well.
Advertising in games does not work.
Microtransactions, I can't see anyone going for it.
Does seem to work, maybe, but adverts, I haven't seen anyone.
Well, City of Heroes, I've not seen their billboards in use in ages and ages. That last, I think, Babylon thingy, the Vin Diesel film, that was the last time I saw an advert on a billboard in there. Planetside's in-game adverts, not seen them used in years.
Even Burnout Paradise, the adverts are sort of disappearing. I haven't seen that many recently.
I think no one's bothering with it. No one's seeing it as a credible way to get
people
your product
doing
information
it, not
out.
Seeing a spike in sales and ignoring it, I suspect.
Because we are adept at ignoring it all. Well done, us.
Yeah.
So other means of payment are going to be necessary. Whether the microtransaction free-to-play model is going to work as a mainstream thing.
I think that is the one that's going to work.
You reckon?
We might do a topic on it in 1 week.
We'll come back to topics, I think, soon, yeah.
Okay, quickly moving on because we're up to 50 minutes already.
Gone. Yeah.
By the way, this may be a long show. I should have warned you at the beginning.
What's happened?
Chrome Hounds, which is a Xbox 360 mech game, and a game I played the demo of when it came out. So I do. It's one that was released over here and I actually know about, and they're turning the servers off.
Yeah, right.
It wasn't that good a game, really, but there's a whole slew of achievements now people won't be able to get. So you've got till January to get your achievements in the game.
Ah, limited rare relics.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Next.
Yeah. Are we there yet?
Project Entropia.
Oh.
Slash Project Entropia Universe slash Planet Calypso.
Planet Calypso, isn't it? That's what they're calling it. I think they accumulate a certain amount of indifferent or laughable PR and then they ditch the name and pick another one to try and bury it all, I think. That's the plan. Anyway, yes.
And it shut down. And came back up with CryEngine 2, their new graphics engine.
Yeah, massive upgrade of a commercial off-the-shelf.
Gorgeous graphic engine, which is capable of wonderful, wonderful things.
I hear a lot of good things about it. I mean, I also hear that it punishes PCs quite spectacularly, but then if you've got the hardware, why wouldn't you want to show it off in the best light? So, what, Crysis, Far Cry, I can't think of any other games. Probably ones with Cry in the title. So, Planet Cryipso, then. How's that now shaking out?
Well, according to Spouse Agro...
Yes.
It looks awful. There.
He's given a bit of a review of it all. Yeah, he's posted a couple of screenshots of their starter area and stuff, and it did look a lot like Second Life.
Graphical glitches all over the shop.
Yeah.
Really bad polygon counts.
And it's not as if it's even user-created content in there.
It's just such a ham-fisted, half-assed job. Oh, let's release this. They won't notice.
I think it has some quite impressive-looking glow and HDR, but apart from that...
It looks pants.
Yeah.
It does not look better than what you had before, folks.
Yeah, I think Bo was suggesting it sort of 2001-era graphics.
Yeah.
I don't know about that, but... Oh, God, it's been a long time since I've been in Entropia, but it was so awful that I'd never want to go back, thank you.
You were licking the sweat off dead bodies.
But apparently, no, I did a bit of reading around on this, and apparently they've not implemented sweating yet on this new engine.
Oh, so there's absolutely no way.
There's absolutely no way to get anywhere without putting some real-life cash in there. So, at present, presumably the sweating... Oh, sweating. I can't talk about that game mechanic without just, like, cringing and sighing at the same time.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
Well, maybe the game will go away now.
Well, they're trying not to market it as a game. I think they're well and truly into the, hey, we're a Second Life type of thing camp these days. Only you can't make your own content and upload it. Everything's providing a game. It is basically a series of fruit machines.
You
pay a couple of dollars for an axe, which will last you so many combats and, you know, so many pulls of the lever. And if you're lucky, you might get 3 cherries in your loot, you know. I don't know. Perhaps I'm a bit prejudiced against it. I'm sure a lot of people like it and appreciate the options it offers them, but... Not my kind of thing, and probably not many of yours, you listening at home.
And finally, I would say it's Stupid Story of the Week, but it's actually a very sensible story.
Sensible Story of the Week.
Oxfam,
yes,
the charity,
who
very well known for selling secondhand books.
Yeah.
And it's a very, you can buy really brilliant books. They actually
I haven't been charity shop book hunting in quite a while. I think I ought to again soon.
Yeah, you can find some gems. They've said that the most unwanted author... the one that they get the most donated of is Dan Brown.
Hey. Next time I'm in town, I'll have to do a quick run around and count how many Da Vinci codes there are in each charity shop.
He's followed by John Grisham. Ian Rankin.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Which is a bit weird because they're actually good books.
Hmm.
Danielle Steele.
Well, it's not about how good they are. It's also about how many were ever printed.
Well,
do
most people keep books after they read them?
I do, but I'm a bit weird. Yeah, I need a new bookcase soon.
I'm very weird, and I've got piles of books.
Yeah, looking around the studio.
I like books, but yeah. Yeah, okay.
Brilliant.
And that'll do for news.
After that epic, I think we're going to take a break for a cup of coffee, and we'll see you back here and recommend you do the same.
Hello, everybody. It's Bo Turkey.
And Leela Turkey.
We're here to get into a really freaking deep discussion about MMOvoices.ning.com. Wouldn't you say, Leela?
Yes, I would definitely say.
How deep is this discussion going to go, Leela?
Very deep.
It's going to go so deep that we're
going
to go...
Charts and graphs, stats.
Stats?
Numbers.
Really? I don't even know what... statistics. I get it. Oh, yeah, that's a big word. I know that one. So we're here to say go over to MMOvoices.ning.com. Join people like the Hemlocks, the crazy guys on this show that talk about like Eve and stuff and all those crazy games. They're very thanky, but we love the fact that they've decided to come onto our site and participate.
Yep.
We're privileged, as a matter of
fact. Yes, we are. Everybody go and check out MMOvoices.ning.com. It's a great social network site. You can blog, post pictures and videos and all kinds of good stuff, and find lots of cool podcasts.
Wouldn't you say
like
that they brought the site up a couple notches in
smarterosity? They're slumming, hanging with us.
Slumming, really?
Yeah.
MMOvoices.ning.com!
Ding!
Do you want to do the next bit?
Yes, it's the Operation Cheap Seats, finally. A little bit late with this one, with all of our summer gadding about and such like, but yes, I did play 14 Days of Vanguard, more or less, give or take, and... Yeah, time to report back on what I found.
Which was?
I could be very cruel here and just say EverQuest 1.5, but...
There you go, then.
Well, there you go, right. Join us next week. No. So 14-day trial. It's available through the Sony launcher. They've got this station launcher there, which is what you'll have if you've got any other SOE game. I'll tell you what, you say what you like about Sony. They do make it all nice and easy to get to the trials, which I do appreciate. It's all there in the launcher, all of their games, even if you only sub to one of them. And all you got to do if you want to try any of the others out is push the button.
Makes sense, I guess.
Yeah, it downloads the whole client. You use your existing station login as your universal login for all their titles. You create an account and so on. It's all good. And it means you don't have to go to like File Planet or wherever to get the client.
File Planet.
Know. Sony at least have the decency to host their own
downloads. Have a similar thing, don't they?
Yeah, NCSoft have got a launcher as well.
Yeah,
it's got a few of their titles in. It's downloaded, installed. I can't remember what size it was. To be honest, I didn't have a file to actually download it. Did it all through the launcher, but all nice and straightforward. Log in, as usual business. It's a sort of fantasy world, EverQuest style, World of Warcraft style, and that type of adventure. Let's see, I've got my little list of bullet points here. Let's go through some of those.
Okay.
19 races, ?
That sounds very comprehensive.
That is quite expansive, yes.
Is that a case of having an overly long development team and having your content developers there all the time?
Character creation bloat, perhaps?
Yeah.
Creep, yeah. 19 races seems like a lot.
It does, right?
I couldn't quantitatively see why many of them needed to exist. There was like 4 different breeds of humans. There was 2 different sorts of giant. There was about 13 different sorts of elves. 4 of them were furries. There were fox people available. Orcs and goblins as well as playable races. Interesting. I didn't really get much of a feel for how they all integrated or whether they were part of a faction or all that sort of thing. Everyone starts on this Isle of Dawn newbie area, and all seem to be on the same side. And I rolled up a goblin because I thought they looked cool. And just was wandering around amongst all the human villagers, doing quests, helping them out, that sort of thing, you know, without any kind of... So, I don't know, it seemed a bit weird having orcs and goblins as playable races, and yet still all on the same starter island, living in harmony and such like. It all seemed a bit weird to me, but... 19 races, 15 classes.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's very much... And the character creation screen looks almost identical to EverQuest 1's. I mean, pretty much this is what I was getting all the way through is, my God, this looks like EverQuest. Oh, this looks like EverQuest. And you can really sort of see the origin and the roots. I think the main guy, that Brad fella, was from the original EverQuest team and went off to Sigil Games to make his own new vision of an MMO. I'm trying to think of the chronology involved. Did it come out before or after EverQuest 2? I'm thinking it was after, wasn't it?
After, yes.
Which is interesting and speaks volumes in itself, I think. So I've got a bullet point here, 15 classes. Yeah, you've got your usual sorts of things, the healers, the warrior types, the the wizardy types, the scouty types. You know, I mean, anyone who's played any MMO at all will recognise the class list almost straight away. I picked a psionicist just because it sounded the most interesting and unique class there, which turned out to be a kind of enchanter, a kind of mind control wizard type.
Always with your mind control.
I know. Is that or tanking? I don't know. Yeah, but I've got very EverQuest and feel EQ2-ish. And then underneath I've written EQ1.5 question mark and then font exclamation mark. It's like all of the stuff has got the writing above their heads like you find in most games, and it's exactly the same font as EverQuest. I didn't know what to make of it. I honestly thought I was playing an EverQuest 2 expansion for the whole of my time there.
That's not a good thing.
Well, I don't know. It's obviously very derivative, but that's not necessarily a bad thing if you liked EverQuest 1 and 2. I mean, if you did hanker for the sort of good old days of EverQuest but are bored of EverQuest itself, then this is clearly a good holiday, a good departure, a sort of unofficial expansion, I suppose. But perhaps I'm being a bit cruel, but oh my god, that font! It just brought all my crashing, horrid memories of EverQuest screaming back when I saw all these names above people's heads. I thought, where am I? What am I playing? Very confusing and not terribly distinctive.
Because you're a bit damaged by EverQuest.
Well, yes, I mean, that was my fault for playing on a free-for-all PvP server, but in general as well, the sort of the grind, the wandering around, all that sort of business, it's... Yeah, this whole game sort of... It was so, I don't know, I mean, derivative, yeah. I mean, I don't mean that in a harsh fashion. It works. It's a well-put-together game from the basics. It's quite functional and playable. But, yeah, if you've played EverQuest 1 or 2, you'll be sort of constantly reminded of the other game while you're playing through, which I'm not sure if it's a good thing or not. Let's see. We got video setting explanations. Yeah, that's interesting. I'm mucking about with the video settings as usual. Trying to get it looking just so on my PC, and all of the options are explained.
Really?
Yeah, I've never seen that
in English.
Yeah,
with the correct descriptions.
Yes. Well, as far as I could tell, because I've never seen them described before. You know, all these things like anti-aliasing and anisotropic filtering, or whatever it is, anisotropic filtering, trilinear filtering, all these strange arcane terms that everyone takes for granted, and you see in every single blinking game you've ever played on a PC, and just a bunch of random tick boxes which just keep ticking things until it blows up,
and then tick back one.
Yeah. Well, you might do, but many game players don't. And you know, when you mouse over them on the option screen, they're all explained in quite good detail in layman's terms, which I found very worthy of note. Let's put it that way. Didn't have any integral anti-aliasing though.
No,
don't know why. Perhaps I couldn't find it. So everything looked a bit jaggy. I mean, the overall graphical style, it did seem a bit. I don't know. I mean, the world was interesting. It was quite big and expansive, and lots of foliage and stuff. But lots of bare patches and lots of stuff that was just dropped in there without sort of fitting its terrain. It's hard to describe. It's a very EverQuest 2 feel to the world in terms
big
of
and tiny bit sparse.
Well, yeah, but also objects just sort of sat there with no context, you know, just dropped in there, and they looked very similar in styling and modelling as well. Hard to describe. I mean, you know, I'm just going to keep repeating this over and over. It was a lot like EverQuest. It was a lot like EverQuest 2. So we'll take that as read for the rest of this, I think, otherwise. weird video crash loading screen. My eyes! Yeah, there was some sort of weird bloom thing going on. Every time the sun rose, the whole screen would just go and turn white briefly. I don't know. It's every time the sun moved.
Yes, bloom.
Yeah, I don't know what was going on there, but possibly a quirk of my graphics settings or something. But yeah, that was strange. Basic gameplay. You start in your little starter village, you talk to people, you get your quests, off you go. You kill things, you collect little ground spawns for some of them. The quest texts are actually quite interesting. The Isle of Dawn, I don't know if that's a recent innovation. I didn't actually get off the Isle of Dawn, which is presumably some sort of starter area. There were three more continents that I never saw but could see on the overall world map tabs. But the Isle of Dawn itself was absolutely immense. It was really big. I was like running for about 20 minutes to get one introductory newbie quest done. I don't know. There was a lot of wandering monsters, if that's what you mean. It was populated, but I wonder if it needed to be quite as vast as it was. I mean, perhaps that is a unique selling point. Perhaps they are aiming for the market, for the explorer market, the people who want to just head off over the hill and get well and truly lost in the wilds.
I can appreciate that.
This does seem a very good game for that. But, yeah, as you say, what is the point of having vast amounts of space if there's not going to be much in it? There was lots of monsters about and lots of interesting terrain and so on, but yeah, I mean, I really didn't get that far. I mean, I sort of just there was quite a long quest where you have to go from the village and talk to a nearby half-orc chieftain bloke. Some sort of diplomatic stuff, which I'll come to in a minute. But and I ran for about 10-15 minutes, and the mini map, it had just moved about like a fraction of an inch. It was, and that you sort of suddenly realise how absolutely enormous the starter newbie island is, and you just think, my God, how big is the real world going to be? I don't know. That will appeal to some people. It won't appeal to others. But yeah, I mean, the world of Vanguard is an enormous place, really, really big. Unmarked quest givers, I've got written here. You got your usual quest blokes with the symbols over their heads. An interesting variety of different symbols, because some of them are different types of quests. There's crafting quests and diplomacy. I'll come to those in a minute. But yeah, I was out clearing out this hobgoblin cave thing, part of this ongoing, quite well put together story, actually, about the initial island and what's going on there. You got this marauding band of hobgoblins that are attacking the place with sudden unprovoked ferocity, and you're there trying to find out why. It almost makes a sort of bit of a miniature D&D module. It seemed quite well integrated within itself, the little quest line there. Much better than the usual introductory newbie quest stuff you find in other games. Go kill 10 of these, go kill 12 of these. Right, you're ready to go to the nearest town. Hurrah! You know, there was actually a narrative going on here, and I found myself sort of, I don't know, almost in spite of myself, sort of wanting to find out what happened next with it all. But anyway, so this hobgoblin cave, and clearing my way out, and at the back there's this ghost, and he's just stood there. He's green on the mini-map. I walk over to him, and I thought, let's try talking to him. And boom, big quest line starts up, and there was nothing. There's no icon over his head or anything.
I like that.
Yeah. So it's not all laid out for you, I think, in Vanguard. I don't know how much this progresses into the real world, the main world.
I think that we do get our hands held maybe a bit too
much. Oh, yeah. We tend to look for the exclamation mark over the head now, or whatever symbol
then
it is in your game.
Then look for where we're meant to be going.
Yeah, exactly. Go there, do this. And they become games rather than worlds. And I think what Vanguard is trying to be is a world rather than a game specifically. There's gameplay there, but... But yeah, there was a whole chain of little quests where this ghost needs various things sorting out before he can be laid to rest, kind of thing. And you're in the cave anyway, doing all this stuff. And yeah, some of it was go kill 12 of these and go kill 5 of those, you know, that standard sort of thing. But Vanguard does have some variation with that. So what have we got here? Complex crafting, EQ2-ish. Yeah, there it is again. The crafting in Vanguard is this whole viable gameplay mechanic in itself, and it works a fair bit like the EverQuest 2 model, with your different actions and reactions going on a timer basis. You use special hotkeys to deal with things that happen during, but the Vanguard one, if anything, is even more complex in that it branches. You have different kinds of random events thrown up and different reactions to dealing with it, and the output items have about 4 different bands of quality as well. It almost bordered on Star Wars Galaxies a bit.
Okay, yeah.
I mean, if you like the crafting, this is going to be one of the better ones. I still don't think it's anywhere near as involved and as complex as A Tale in the Desert, but, I mean, that's an entirely...
Nothing is.
No, that's an entirely different kettle of fish anyway. But I think, yeah, I mean, the crafting seemed very robust, seemed quite intricate. I mean, I honestly didn't get a chance to look into it in as much depth as I'd like, but from what I saw, it was pretty well-rounded, pretty robust. I couldn't figure out where to where to mine fish, though. I couldn't figure out where...
Did you consider the water?
Well, I couldn't work out where the actual harvesting was. I don't know whether I was just being dense or I accidentally clicked too quickly through a quest text or something, but I couldn't find where the raw materials came from. Presumably they're in there somewhere and you get the pickaxes and all the rest of it to go and get the bits and pieces. You only have 3 crafting professions in there, which is interesting, and they sort of combine together to make... It's almost, I suppose, Lotro-ish, in that you have sort of an overall bracketed set of crafting abilities, and there's 3 different ones you can pick.
Okay.
So, yeah, I think it had a lot of potential. I think possibly it produces very good gear and in excessive loot, but without some more study, it would be hard to say. But yeah, I was quite impressed with the crafting from what I saw. The diplomacy card game. Now, this is something I heard a lot about during Vanguard's big time, you know, when it was launching, when everyone was talking about it, and when it was new and interesting, is that you got this third way. Where you got, yes, you got the combat, yes, you got the crafting, and no, we got this other thing as well.
Which uses Pikachu.
Which is the card game, yeah. It's basically, I mean, you go through a whole bunch of tutorial and introductory stuff, and there's the in-game help to further expand on the concepts and so on, but it's a strange card game that you play with 5 cards in your hand, and they have cooldowns, but you don't have a deck. So prior to engaging in these diplomacy quests, these diplomacy combats, I suppose, if you will, you have to put together 5 cards. And you get given a whole load of cards in-game. I don't think that's a microtransaction thing like many of the integrated card games you find in these games. It's all self-contained. You pick your 5 cards and you make the hand, and that's that. And then when you next go to talk to whoever, you'll use those 5 cards. It's sort of Magic the Gathering. You've got a certain amount of points. No, you have a point slider, that's right. You're 0, plus and minus. And at the end of each hand... Yeah, at the end of each round, you need the count to be on your side. It's like a tug of war based on the points played on the cards. And as long as your points are in the positive, he will continue to talk to you. It's like a weird quest dialogue that you have to work for, you know?
Yeah.
It takes the form of a conversation, and each time you play a card, say, I don't know, reasoned rebuttal or something. You play one of those, and it'll have a certain amount of points, and they'll play something back, another type of argument or conversational position. And at the end of that round, you'll have a plus or minus on the overall score. And as long as you have to have X number of pluses at the end of each round, you have to have a plus. And for the number of rounds that he has health points. It's quite tricky to explain, but it did seem to be one of those simple-to-learn, difficult-to-master card games as a whole.
Is it fun?
I don't know. I found it quite frustrating, but I wonder if that's because I need to work, grind out some better cards from quest rewards or whatever. I mean, the initial... Perhaps I wasn't quite understanding the mechanics of it. I think it could be a lot of fun if you get really good at it, if it clicks, if you understand what is going on and you... I don't know, collect the right cards or have the right buffs and bonuses and so on. But also, sort of stepping away from the mechanics of it all, it seemed quite sinister, because what you were basically... Just reading through the dialogue as you win each round and it expands on each dialogue, you're basically trying to con and connive information out of these people who are just minding their own business and doing their own thing. And it all seemed very shifty and essentially dishonest, which I suppose is what diplomacy is, really, yeah. Isn't it? And I was just feeling strangely uneasy, even though I was winning some of these. The text would describe you affecting quite false sort of facial expressions and attitudes, and then buying it. You know,
yeah.
And it all just made me feel a bit unclean, really. But I do appreciate it as an interesting game mechanic. It was actually, and it's not just self-contained, it is relevant, because what you can do is, as well as the sort of the particular diplomacy card games you use to earn your diplomacy XP and just work up that ladder, there are each town and outpost has a number of people in it who you can just do free-form diplomacy against. You can just challenge them and they'll have certain stats. And if you win enough of these games in a row, that outpost then starts to generate a buff.
Ooh.
A global buff, anytime anyone comes into that outpost's area of influence, they'll gain this buff, and it will just stay on them. And then when they leave, it stays on them for an hour afterwards.
That's nice.
Yeah. So the diplomacy players are actually relevant to the crafters and relevant to the people who are doing the standard MMO combat questing. And I thought that was really good. I mean, the newbie area, I don't know if people just weren't good enough at the card game or weren't even bothering to try, but I didn't see any of these buffs actually take place. But I'm guessing the capital cities in the main world, once you're off the newbie land,
there
probably is a whole gang of whole groups of players who make it their business to ensure that these buffs are kept going on various strategic outposts and so on. So it seemed to have a relevance to the rest of the game, which is not what I picked up from early reviews of Vanguard, where they were saying the diplomacy card game was interesting but irrelevant to anything else.
Maybe they added that up.
Perhaps that has come later. I don't know, but...
You probably wouldn't spot it as people were doing it.
Yeah, but to generate these buffs, you have to challenge some really quite difficult opponents that perhaps are beyond the starting player's ability, or certainly beyond mine. Also, I kept losing faction. Every time you lose one of these card games, you actually lose faction with the people you tried it on. So you don't want to do it too much, but until you get quite good at it, or at least stand a chance of breaking even. Back to my list here. Diplomacy card game, yeah. Work for your quest text. Yeah, exactly. I mean, it was simple things like one early introductory option was you talk to a guy to get a key to an equipment storage box.
Okay.
And basically use your diplomacy skills to try and convince him that you need the equipment to further the overall aims of the people and this sort of thing. And if you win, you get a key and you can go and use that on the chest. And there's like diplomacy outfits. You have about four different paper dolls, one for combat, one for appearance. There's a diplomacy one, because you wear special diplomacy clothes. Then there was there's a crafting and harvesting ones as well, and all that sort of thing. So, sinister diplomacy, yeah. I mean, I just didn't know what to make of it all, really. I suppose it's a sword of combat, yeah. But a combat of the wits, rather than just having at them with a sword. But yeah, I did feel like I was wheedling, you know.
Yeah.
I suppose that's what it is. I got world server troubles. I think that might have been my own internet. I would be quite loath to place that as a downside on a particular game without proving it. I think during that week I had a bit of internet trouble. But, and that's about all I got, really. Most of what I got from the 14-day trial is that 14 days is nowhere near long enough to get a fair impression of Vanguard, because it's such a, I don't know, in-depth and expansive sort of game. The world is really huge. The game mechanics it introduces to you are quite complex and in-depth.
So in general, you'd fail the 14-day trial as a adequate way of explaining the game?
Yeah, I don't think 14 days is long enough. I think you'd probably need a month, maybe more. But maybe they need some kind of unlimited free trial on the island type thing, the Isle of Dawn area. Because yeah, it did seem apparent that once you work your way through this big story, there'll be some way to get off onto three entirely different and seemingly quite immense continental mainlands. So I don't know, perhaps. So perhaps the free trial doesn't do them service. Although, to be fair, this was the fortnight I was also had just got Prototype as well.
Ah,
yeah. So, so the combat in Vanguard is nowhere near as engaging as the combat in Prototype.
Yeah.
The special virus abilities you get are nowhere near as good in Vanguard.
Graphically,
Vanguard isn't as good as Prototype. You see my problem.
Yeah. Isn't this my argument?
Vanguard is not as good as Prototype.
Isn't this?
That's my review.
My argument for having given up most MMOs.
Well, yeah, because you get through an awful lot of console titles on the go, and I suppose you can't help make direct comparisons as you go. Many MMOs are not as good as many console titles, and Vanguard being quite an older title and perhaps a bit more dated against what is essentially a cutting edge console port.
One of the most fun consoles.
Just not very fair at all. No, but unfortunately, I'm human, and I was seduced by playing my new single player game a bit during this fortnight, which kind of helped Vanguard a lot. And anyway, I'm usually playing three or four other MMOs as well during these cheap seats things, so take that, you know, with a caveat there, definitely. But I think it's interesting. I think if you've never played EverQuest or EverQuest 2, I think this would be an interesting and fresh experience for you. I think if you played EverQuest 1 and 2 and liked them a lot but wished there were more expansions and you're bored of all the stuff that's there, have a go at Vanguard, which does seem to function as a very good unofficial expansion for EverQuest 1. I don't know if that's what they meant. I mean, obviously, Sigil was founded by, I can't remember, is it Brad something or other? I've forgotten his name now. But the chap behind Sigil was basically one of the defining voices behind EverQuest 1, and basically went off to make his own game and clearly repeated a lot of what he thought worked. But then there are interesting new aspects to it, the crafting. I mean, the diplomacy is something you won't find in any other... Well, you'll find it in Free Realms, but that's a bolted-on extra card game. You find it in Star Wars and EverQuest 2, but again, those are bolted-on extra games. This seems a much more integrated and relevant thing to the game itself. It's not just sit down under a tree, now we're going to play a totally different card game.
Well,
it matters to the world, and it's built in.
The EverQuest and Galaxies... I always just saw as a way of making more cash.
Yeah, they were just nothing to do with the MMO at all. They were based on the same license, and we'll just build a client in.
They just wanted you to buy cards.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's no card shop, I don't think, for Vanguard. I mean, you earn the cards in game through doing the diplomacy questing, so it lacks that sinister marketing model. I don't know. I'm not sure if I'd recommend it or not, to be honest. Like I say, it'll appeal to some people, but not others. I think comparing it against, you know, the Lotros and the World of Warcrafts and Age of Conans and so on, I think it is a B-list MMO, to be honest. But it has its own charm, its own unique features. I mean, if you've tried everything else, why not give this a go? Certainly. But I think 14 days is gonna. I don't know. Maybe this is one where you do need to give it all of that 14 days, let's put it that way. I think I probably played it for about 8 to 10 hours, and I know people will tell me that's unfair, and I do agree. But busy during that time, mostly partly playing Prototype, unfortunately.
That's a problem with a 14-day trial idea. That's not.
I think 14-day trials, well, this is what we see again and again with all this Operation Cheap Seat stuff and in the ones I've done in the past on the blog, is 14 days is not long enough. It's just stupid. But on the other hand, you can usually tell within about 2 hours if you're going to like an MMO or not.
Yeah.
The fundamental gameplay, if it changes drastically from hour two to hour four, then obviously they've designed it wrong, because they're teaching you stuff that you're not then going to use and apply further down the game. So yeah, that's what I thought. I think overall, summing up, EverQuest 1.5, which is not necessarily a bad thing.
Unless you're EverQuest 2.
Well, yeah, it just surprises me that it came out after EverQuest 2. That's the thing. That's what makes me ask a few questions and stroke my chin a bit. But there you go.
I think it was after.
I don't know. I'd have to check. I'm pretty sure it was. It was because it was. I think it was going to be a reaction to EverQuest 2, a back to basics. It was very much the design intent, certainly when it was going through its hype cycle, this is a back to basics. This is a back to the old school, back to the hardcore of gaming. But I think they caved quite near towards its release and started to make WoW-like concessions, largely to try and get normal gamers to want to actually play it, you know?
Yeah.
There you go. That's what I managed to do. And then I didn't bother playing anything Cheap City for the last 2 weeks, giving myself a fortnight off. I don't know what to play next.
I think you should play.
Yeah? Go on, then you can have a go at suggesting one this time, then.
You should play Warhammer.
Warhammer. Yeah, oh, right, okay. I'm going to have a go at Warhammer for 2 weeks.
I think your one-year rule is...
well and truly out of the three-month rule, is it? Okay. All right, do they do a 14-day trial?
I believe so.
I'll have a check. But, okay, then if they do, then that's the one I'll have a go at for the next fortnight.
Yeah.
And I'll see if I can enrage some people over my superficial, half-assed opinions at the end of the fortnight. All right, then, so what were you doing while I was doing that?
I'm going to make a bing.
Yeah, go on then, make a bing. What are you doing? Oh dear,
my Mac crashed.
Your Mac blew up. Oh dear, there's bits of Apple everywhere.
Yeah, I've got a crash in the display manager somewhere, and I can't figure out what's causing it. I think it may all be overheating because all Macs overheat.
Anyway, so last we left you, you'd basically decided after playing Runes of Magic that you never want to play an MMO again.
Yeah.
And so I tasked you with finding me a number of interesting Xbox community project type games.
And then what happened was the Summer of Arcade.
All right, what's that?
That was basically
some sort of special promotion.
Microsoft releasing a couple of games over the summer.
Okay.
Of which three of them turned out to be really, really good.
Okay, so
and one was the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Differentiate for me then the Xbox Live Arcade against, say, Gears of War or Burnout Paradise.
Arcade games are smaller.
Yeah.
Cheaper.
Mm-hmm. So what's the price points are we talking for these? Average sort of
about
type
a tenner for a lot of them.
Yeah,
maybe
okay.
a little less for some of them. A bit more for more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that kind of thing.
Yeah, and they've got only 200 achievement points instead of 1,000.
Yeah, so you need five times as many. Yeah,
yeah, but mm-hmm. They're designed to be shorter, less complex, and just sort of drop in fun.
Right.
Yeah, something. Monkey Island was released as one. There was a Pac-Man, stuff like that.
Okay, so sort of getting back to the arcade type of experience, which I'm sure we'll come back to in the Twitter question, actually. But
yeah, and basically, mm-hmm. There are three games released that I really, really enjoyed over the summer.
Okay.
And have spent a lot of time playing.
So this isn't actually the Xbox community homebrew stuff.
No, these are proper ones.
These are proper developed commercial products.
One of them is Epic, so it's by the people who...
All right, so you've already failed on the assignment I gave you.
Yeah, I'll do them next.
All right, yeah. All right, and so what have you found for us this week?
First of all, the three games we're going to cover. First of all, there's, I think I'll start with Splosion Man.
Splosion Man, yeah, you mentioned that last week, I think. But go on then, tell us about that in detail.
It's, all of these games actually are very similar in that they're a 3D engine doing a 2D side-scrolling game.
Ah, right.
Whether it be platform or whatever.
It's a retro thing there, a bit going on.
And Splosion Man is a platform game where you have to, through three... controls, left, right, and explode. You have to make your way through a platforming level.
Okay, so the explosion also catapults you into the air a bit.
Yes, you jump.
So it takes the jump function.
And you can triple jump by doing three explosions, but you can only do three explosions before you run out. And you recharge it by holding onto a wall or being on the ground.
I see, right.
And so basically it's just a bunch of puzzles to get from one end of the level to the next.
Okay, sounds simple.
It's very simple, apart from some of the levels are quite fiendish.
I was watching you playing a bit earlier, yeah.
Yeah, they start off really, really simple, but you get some quite complicated timed jumping.
And yeah, this triple jump stuff through timed electrical fields with like robot things shooting at you, and some guy eating donuts a lot.
Yeah, and at the moment I'm, as I always get, stuck on a level. I got to a one that I just couldn't get past there.
Yeah.
And so I'm probably tomorrow I'll go back and pass that one.
Yeah.
It's one of those good puzzly go back to it day later.
It looked great as well. It's a fantastic protagonist there. It's like basically it's just Cinder's crisped Muppet goblin guy.
Yeah. who does an awful lot of smart ass remarks.
Certain charm to it all.
Yeah, it definitely has a certain charm. It's an incredibly simple game, but yeah, I reckon there's a lot of long activity in it.
It's certainly a genre you don't see a lot of. I mean, flash games sort of keep the torch aloft, but you don't often see a lot of sideways platformers these days.
You do on Xbox Live Arcade. A lot of people are writing them because
it seems the ideal medium for them. Simple games that you probably wouldn't get away with charging $50 for.
Yeah. Well, you shouldn't want to get away with charging $50. There is a space in the market for cheaper games. Because not everyone wants to be playing a blockbuster game that's going to take them 20 hours to complete.
Yeah.
Although I suspect this one's going to take me more than 20 hours. As I work it all out without using spoilers. So, yeah, all in all, I'd recommend people give that one a go.
Excellent.
It's a very good game. Next, there's Shadow Complex, which is the latest game, which uses the Unreal Engine.
Yeah, you were showing me some of that as well.
So it looks really nice.
Yeah.
And it's basically a platformy shooter game.
Yeah, sort of weird 2.5D. Well, you couldn't even go backwards or forwards and out of the screen.
All on one plane.
It was literally a sideways scroller, but with done using a 3D engine. Very effective, actually. Yeah. It looked really good.
Graphically, it does not look like a cartoony type game. It looks like a
It looked like a normal 3D game that you just happen to have a locked camera on.
If you were to make it into a first person game, it would probably not look too far out of place.
Yeah, yeah.
And that one is some puzzles, some shooting.
Some guy running around an underground base with a pistol and a flashlight there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Reminded me a bit of Impossible Mission.
Very much so.
Yeah, yeah. That's what I was getting when I was watching you play that.
Yeah, I haven't got very far in it because it only just came out. But it does seem to be very nicely balanced and quite interesting.
Sort of just one more go sort of feel to it. Yeah.
And drop in again. Although the save points were a little bit stretched out.
Ah, right. So you take several goes, but you get there in the end sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah. I would like to be able to just drop off where I was and come back there, but I won't. I'll come back to
something in the nature of a save game.
Yeah. Not sure how long the game actually is. There's some people saying they can complete it in 3 hours or so.
Well, but I think, and should, yeah. You know. Yeah.
But
that sort of order, yeah.
Yeah, from what I've seen so far, it's going to last me a lot longer than that.
Money well spent.
Yeah. You can pick up upgrades and stuff and equipment which gives you abilities. Like,
what's the basic sort of story behind that then, the plot there? For some reason you've broken into this underground bunker full of robots.
Well, there's two things going on at the moment. One is a guy in suit of power armour.
Oh, right.
And something about the vice president. And you were out on a trip with your girlfriend and you were going spelunking. In a cave.
Unluckiest caver in the world,
She goes on ahead for reasons which weren't entirely apparent. And you follow her down and she gets captured by people in this underground base which happens to be down there.
Whoops.
And then you go in to try and rescue her.
Ah, right.
And then have to go off chasing
explains why you're dressed in rather casual sweater and jeans rather than the usual combat webbing and night goggles and the rest of it.
I was quite impressed that he was only wearing slightly more sensible clothing than we used to wear going caving.
Yes.
Yeah, so, yeah, another game I'd recommend.
It did look really good, actually. I mean, you just sort of don't really think about the sort of sideways platformer being a sophisticated and detailed medium, but it just shows that you can make it into a quite a spectacular sort of well-polished-looking product instead of the manic miner.
Yes. And the last of the games is one which I probably think is my favourite of the bunch, which is Trials HD.
Okay.
Now, Trials is allegedly some flash-based game from the real internet.
Oh, right.
But there's a 360 version now. And what it is there's a bike, a warehouse.
Yeah.
You have two controls. You've got your acceleration, deceleration, the brake, and also leading forwards and back.
Oh, right.
And you have to get over this. Looks like a sort of a really Heath Robinson roller coaster type track.
This is brilliant.
And you have to get across it without falling off.
This is, yeah, I mean, it starts off, you think, oh, it's just a motorbike jump course. And it just goes and goes and goes. You must be in the longest warehouse in the world.
Yeah.
And then it starts doing loop the loops and
exploding barrels.
Exploding barrels.
And the one that I showed you just so happened to end with a spike at head height to stop you.
It really, I mean, it was, yeah, it was good just in the gameplay, but also just watching the guy crashing and burning into, like, really uncomfortable and painful-looking ways.
Well, it's when you do a jump trying to get up onto a higher bit, but miss it, just crack the guy's head on it.
Catch it at throat height, yeah. <It's>, land the bike on your spine, yeah.
It certainly got a very Skate 2-esque.
Yeah, that was it, yes. Yeah, I remember we were talking about that on a previous show. And,
yeah,
and
it's the skateboarding ooh-ah type.
Yeah, because it's sort of really quite believable looking ragdoll bloke on the bike with his motorbike helmet on, and it doesn't help that he's screaming in terror halfway through it.
Yeah, some of the jumps he really does scream.
You get the impression that he's not really enjoyed himself a lot. And it doesn't need vast car crashes or exploding helicopters or super virus tentacle powers.
It's just a puzzle game.
It's just a bloke hitting himself on the head in an uncomfortable manner and looking realistic about it that really sort of taps in somehow.
And the best bit about it is, at the end of each level, it tells you what your friends did, well they did, their time and how many times they fell off.
It's all rather competitive, yes.
Oh, yeah. Luckily, I've only got one of my friends who's got the games.
Oh, no, he's getting ahead. Oh, no, you're behind.
Yeah, it shows you as you're playing. Yeah, wonderful. Yeah, so I definitely recommend that game. I reckon that was going to keep
So if you had to pick one of the three, it would
be that one,
it'd be the motorbike game. Trials HD.
Trials HD.
Okay. All this stuff's easy to find in the Xbox menus, I guess.
Yep. Yeah, and it just goes to show that you don't need to fork out 50, 60 quid to get a good game.
Well, also that the simple ideas can be fun too, and
I think that's something that we're losing a lot. The fact that fun drop-in game can be fun.
I've often sort of lamented in recent months that I don't seem to have anything on the PC that I could just play for 10 minutes. Yeah. I mean, well, Prototype comes quite close. You can just fire that up and run around the city throwing cars at helicopters.
You don't feel like you're getting anywhere.
No.
But with these games which have distinct levels like Trials HD or Explosion Man, you can chip away at a level.
I don't think I have anything that has levels anymore in my game collection. I'm trying to really seriously think, and there's nothing where, you know, level 10, level 11, you know, it's all character progression, not world levels anymore, and I just wonder if I perhaps missed something, yeah.
I think we need to start a campaign to bring back world levels.
Hmm, yeah. Certainly whether appropriate, anyway.
Oh, I think they're always appropriate.
I don't know if it'll work in an MMO too well, but...
No. Okay, not always appropriate. So, yeah, three very good games.
Excellent.
And there also was a Mutant Turtle game, which I didn't play because I don't like them.
Fair enough. Good stuff.
So,
yes. So there we go. That's what we did for the last fortnight.
Yeah.
So next fortnight, you're going to actually look at some homemade games by actual real players then.
Yeah, I will actually look at those games next.
Community.
I have actually been looking at them, and I have some reviews, but I thought I'd go with those instead this time.
Okie dokie. Shall we do some Twitter questioning?
We can do some Twitter.
Actually, you had a related news story to this, didn't you?
I did, yes. You
start. You'll find that while I rummage around on Twitter.
But it just crashed. But yeah, okay, I know what it is.
I
just
see.
Got you to the right place.
Oh, you had. I got the Dalek now, haven't I?
Yeah. You with your confusing changing of avatars.
I just really respect Daleks, that's all. So podcast question then. Brooding on the death of arcade gaming at the moment, regale me with your favourite memories of coin-ops of yesteryear. Yeah, this is me and you going to various places over the summer and seeing various amusement arcades and being somewhat let down and disappointed by the obvious change that's happened to them over the last last decade or so.
Gone back to what they were before. Before, they were always the little coin shuffling game with the tray of coins and the grabbing arms. And then during the 80s, they turned into computer games.
And now computer games are more or less apparently phasing out of them, and it's all going back to... Well, but it's not really going back to basics, is it?
It's going back to the gambling games, which they always have been.
Perhaps I'm hankering for an aberration.
I think it was Coast. I seem to mention Coast every week.
Yes.
But they went to a... I think it was in Bournemouth. Not Bournemouth, right? Wherever. No, up north.
Blackpool.
Blackpool, that's the one. Begins with B.
Yeah, close.
Yes. My knowledge of...
See what you did there.
Yeah. and apparently there's a old arcade, which is, I think it was 30s or something.
Oh, yeah.
And it's got all the old games in.
And it's mostly kinetic games involving a penny sliding or falling or rolling or something, isn't it? Whereas, the whole sort of video game thing, it came and now it seems to be going, as far as I can tell. I mean, the most impressive thing we saw at Namco was, I think, Guitar Hero Arcade. And that's something you have in your living room. I've ranted lots about this on the blog anyway, but... So let's have a look. We'll see what you folks remember from the good old days. We've got Kirith Kadachi's first with playing Shinobi every lunch at high school at the Max Milk across the street. Ah, there we go. Shinobi, that'd be a sideways beat 'em up where you're a ninja. All I remember about that one is you had a special the sort of superpower button that you push every now and then when it charges up, and that makes you explode into 100 ninjas, and they all bounce around the screen and annihilate everything. That was awesome. We've got Crystal. There's an arcade about 5 miles from my house. Ah, so the arcade's perhaps not dying or dead everywhere.
Don't say what games are in it, though.
Well, quite. Yeah. Let's see. Eric's show. Playing the classics. Pac-Man, Space Invaders. When I was on holiday with my parents. Ooh, that's going back a bit. That was the first generation, wasn't it? Pac-Man and Space Invaders. I do remember seeing a Pac-Man... No, it was Space Invaders. Actual Space Invaders arcade machine. It was the travelling fun fair that came round to our town back when I was a kid. I remember being a bit nonplussed by it because it had already moved on a bit by then.
Yeah.
Oh, this is a bit old. Tepetastic. I spent over £100 at a Butlin's type place over 2 days in an arcade. Lots of dead zombies and hundreds of tickets, in quote and brackets. Yeah, the tickets. Rather than pay you back in cash, which may potentially lose the money, they give you tickets instead, and then you go and swap them for tatty old little toys instead. Quite sinister, really, when you think about it objectively, but fun at the time. We've got there. Mashium. I loved Rabio Lepus, a.k.a. Rabbit Punch. It was a Gradius clone with colourful GFX and fun gameplay. Pure fun. I don't even know what that is. But
I don't know.
Good times, though. got JMO1337. Simpsons arcade game. Talk about a change eater. Oh, I remember that one. It was like you could team up for double attacks, like Homer would pick Bart up and throw him at people. That's good fun. And it was all Krusty the Clowns and stuff coming at you as villains. It's all a bit surreal, really. Welsh Troll, Altered Beast was a fave, but Double Dragon was the best. Ah, yeah. Altered Beast. That was the one where you kept changing into different animals after you went with power-ups every other level. Let's see, Double Point, Green Beret, 1943. Oh, I remember that one.
Oh, yeah.
Top-down scrolling shooter, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Bomberman. Oh, yeah.
Bomberman, great fun.
Came to mind. Green Beret became a real problem when it was released on C64. See, this is exactly what I mean. You'd often see arcade game ports turning up on early home computers.
Yeah.
That was the way it went. It was the arcade where the innovation happened, and the home computing had to keep up.
But what was happening at the time was the home computing people were, to start with, just ripping off the games.
Mm.
If you follow the Llamasoft story, they basically, his version of Grid Runner, he got the idea from just hearing about it, so it's a bit different than the other versions.
Mm.
And he thought, oh, we need to do one of those.
So I think very early home computing, they were working under this misapprehension that people were going to use it to do their accounts and stuff. I mean, Spectrum came with a programming language printed on every key. You know?
Yeah, well, that was to save memory.
Well, quite. But then
Sinclair never really liked the idea that the Spectrum was for games.
Yeah.
He hated games, which is why he went to the QL after.
Ah, I see. Let's see, podcast question from Zia Yug. Spending a fortune on Dragon's Lair in the arcades around Newquay. Shame it had such an awful control system. The Dragon's Lair invented the QuickTime event.
Yes, which
was one long QuickTime event after another.
Hey, QuickTime event.
you put 10p in, you watch a cartoon for about 30 seconds, and then you fail to push fail to push left at the right time and die. And then you had to rinse and repeat. And basically, it was a matter of just learning every possible outcome from each junction point. And it was so sinister.
Do you know the last platform it was released on?
No.
Blu-ray.
And you control it with a DVD remote?
Yeah.
Oh, blimey, you've got to get that. I want to have a go at that where I don't have to pay 10p a death. Ah, oh, dear Dragon's Lair. Dr. Torag, I was never much of a coin-op gamer, and I much preferred backseat driving and applauding the hero whilst drinking beer. Oh, yeah. See, that was the sort of thing. You'd stand and watch over the shoulder as someone else had a go. You don't...
Oh, no, there was a thing recently saying that people still like to do that with normal gaming. And I understand that. I do like watching people play normal games still.
Yeah. I can see that, certainly, yeah. Zyug, still ranting about Dragon's Lair. I guess that's what you get when you combine a laser disc and a joystick. One really annoying quick time event game.
Yeah.
It goes on to add, but I loved it for some strange reason.
Because you're strange.
Well, that's why it's a strange reason.
That's true, yeah.
Bevis, that hunting game was horrible. Made me feel bad inside. Yeah, just to clarify, we're at Namco, and I think it's called Extreme Hunting 2.
Even huntinger.
Yeah, more hunting than ever. And you get this light gun shotgun thing you hold and point at the screen, and you pick an animal you want to go off and murder. And they're actually surprisingly lifelike representations of bears, and you lose points for shooting the cubs. But you have to basically murder your way through a whole load of furry animals. They had a squirrel bonus round, which is basically where a whole load of branches are put on the screen. Squirrels all run past really fast, and you have to bag as many as you can. And then there was an alligator bonus round. It was just surreal, and also quite uncomfortable for all concerned. Really, I don't think Bevis was enjoying it an awful lot there. No, Alien vs Predator, Streets of Rage star beat 'em up was my fave. Oh, don't remember that. But see, the beat 'em up. Yeah,
I never liked beat 'em ups.
No,
I
never really a fan. No,
never at all.
Always preferred the sort of, well, this is it. Even back then, I was always into the PvE rather than the PvP. let's see. Melmothulu. Oh, he's got a link there. Maybe too long. So, whole day playing Rampage with brother on holiday next door to Disneyland. So you got the whole of Disneyland there, but no.
But Rampage was a good game.
Rampage was awesome. That was the one where you got the Godzilla, the big wolf, and the big monkey, and you have to knock down the skyscrapers, doesn't it? Eat people. And the link there, oh, go on then, we'll do a pimp. I think this is going to...
I've read this.
It's killed in a smiling accident, where there's a quite long and insightful essay on arcade gaming and how the model applies to current gaming and such like. That'll be at I fail at spelling. Do you want to do it?
Killed in a spinning accident. Work out the initials.
KIASA. Hurrah! .org. Yes. Yeah. And there it is. The post is entitled "The Morals of a Goat: The Artistic Integrity of a Slot Machine." No, I highly recommend that as a read. So back to the Twitter question. Please.
Click on the title bar.
Stupid Mac. Okay, so we got Enlightened One. Yeah, is that what that says? Yeah. It's not dead, it's just moved onto computers. Anywhere there's free net access, any Apple store flashes the new arcade.
It's not the same.
Well, I suppose there's the tangibility of it, the texture of the experience, the standing in a dark room full of brain-pounding noise and furtively shoveling coins into a slot to keep playing. But I think the Flash games tend to resemble the old arcade style more than what goes on PC and console these days, though. It's like I was saying, it's the 15-minute, the 10-minute drop-in game. Perhaps Flash is where it's all gone these days. Ridiculo, winning Tekken so many times that no one bothered to coin up against me anymore. Awesome. Play to crush. Playing Terra Cresta in Beach Cafe during summer. Terra Cresta. Does that sound like a tobogganing game?
It does, yeah.
I don't know.
I don't know. I've never heard of it.
Outbluffed a bit here, I think. Unwise, seeing Street Fighter 2 for the first time and thinking it was the most amazing thing I'd ever witnessed.
They always did look good.
Well, that's it. You sort of go in and you do the floor walk, don't you? You pick out... the first time you're in there, you're looking around seeing what's new, seeing what the shiny is. And it was a place of development. It was the cutting edge for gaming for quite a while.
Last arcade I was in had Sega Rally 2.
Yeah.
1995.
Phoenix DeFi, you got to love the original Star Wars arcade game with those vector graphics. Sit-down version was best.
That's the pinnacle of gaming.
It was, yes.
Gaming has not got as good as that ever again.
Shoot fireballs.
I used to go places specifically hoping they'd have it.
And that sort of weird chimey rendition of the Star Wars theme. Awesome. Let's see. Zozo says, I remember getting second place on a ZZ Top song at Namco. That was quite good. Yeah, that was also last weekend, I think. Yeah. I was very impressed with him, and so were all the people passing by. He was a guitar hero. It was awesome.
Only second, though.
Only second, yeah. First loser, as I shouted at him helpfully. But four of us on the Teenage Mutant Not Ninja Hero Turtles machine was always a favourite. Cowabunga, dude. Yeah, they couldn't call them Ninja Turtles for some reason. They had to call them Hero Turtles.
Yes, because ninjas were too violent.
Yeah, something like that. But yeah, the four-player machine, we all sort of cluster around. You take on one of the turtles each.
Yeah.
That was quite fun. Return of the Jedi to Shuttler, with that awesome controller cabinet thing. Outrun RoboCop Shinobi, Return of the Jedi, that was the one with the sort of weird controller, and you had the speed bike level, didn't you, with the Ewoks flinging logs at you and so on. MMOG Dog, says Space Invaders and Gauntlet had the biggest impact for me. Gauntlet, yes.
Yeah.
Your four-player dungeon hack there. With the different,
available on Xbox Live Arcade.
It was all on the same console. You had still managed to get four joysticks and two buttons each, at least.
It was a bit crowded.
It was quite crowded. You had to be quite good friends with the rest of your party, Harry Hole there. As a kid, I saw a dude play Dragon's Lair flawlessly to completion. Must have cost him a fortune to get there. I'd die at Drawbridge. I can't even remember. I think Drawbridge was obviously very early on, but... Wow, because it was literally a game of practice.
Yeah.
You couldn't even see what the next thing was until you'd mastered the previous one. I mean, it was just such a cynical, ingenious marketing move, really, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Ackley says, local pizza place had Star Wars pinball and asteroids. Owner let us buy beer even though we were only 15. Those are the days. Ooh, I'm not sure I can condone of underage drinking, but happy days. And also,
15.
Yeah, well, this is it. This is spoken from a comfortable age of 34. I think that's... Oh, here we go. That's at Slug Reno. I remember getting beat senseless on a coin-op Tekken 2 by a middle-aged Japanese fellow in Okinawa when I was deployed there in 96. Wow. Some mild-mannered middle-aged Japanese fellow walks up.
Yeah, remember, if there's a mild-mannered Japanese guy anywhere in an arcade, it is a hustle. You will lose.
He saw you coming.
Yeah.
And there we go. Excellent. Thank you for sharing your childhood memories, or not-so-childhood memories, with us all there.
As I probably said before many times, mine is definitely...
And you had that... did you find that relevant news story?
Yes, it was Thingy, who plays Sylar and Spock.
Oh, yeah.
Is
in the new film, yeah.
Helping campaign to save four arcades.
Ah, okay. So, they're in threat of demolition or whatever, and he's trying
they want to shut them down. No one goes to them anymore.
Well, they have to, this is it. I mean, it is a business. It's a going concern, and they've got to try and make their money. And
you know what arcades need?
What do arcades need?
Xboxes and PS3s. Just admit that that's what they are.
A console-based web cafe rather than your standard arcade console cabinet thing.
Yeah, and there's quite a lot of games which you could pay up for.
A bit like Eurogamer Expo that we went to. That was basically just a whole bunch of consoles all in front of big tellies.
That was more to make us learn about the games we had to buy.
Well, quite. It was a marketing exercise. Yeah. But running that all year round, would that work?
Quite a lot of games you could put in a payment method for...
I remember, I think it was in response to a comment on the blog, actually, when I was talking about the arcades, and someone brought up, I think it was, I can't even remember what it was called now, it was the Play 10 or something. It was very literally a consumer off-the-shelf console that had a time lock on it, and you paid coins per flat-out time. So you could play as much as you like, die as much as you like, and after like 5 minutes, you had to put another pound coin in.
Yeah, it's not a pound.
I don't know. It sounded a bit sinister, really. I mean, this is all taps into micropayments and
subscriptions. You're not going to play Final Fantasy on it, no.
Yeah, well, exactly. Some 20 hours to finish. Play Morrowind on it or something. Yeah. So, that's enough of that, I think.
Yes.
So, what did you learn this week?
I learned that apparently you should stop playing MMOs. Yeah, well,
I didn't think I'd get through the whole show without this mention. Yes, I attracted some thoughtful commentary on one of my recent articles.
Yeah.
I just pass it off as the internet. I'd be insulted if I hadn't attracted at least one hater by now.
One well-respected forum chum.
And I've learnt that, I apparently should spend at least 2 years not playing MMO and playing a sport of some sort. So do write in with suggestions for what sport that ought to be.
Oh. Archerian Mega Tennis.
Right, good stuff. And with that, we'll see you next time.
Goodbye.